This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
It's coming fast now, isn't it, Roger?
Oh,
Thanksgiving will be here soon.
I can smell the turkey a-cooking.
The cold weather's settling in after such an amazingly warm fall that we had. And, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I was checking my Facebook, as I am wont to do every morning, and I noticed that for the last 2 years, I had mentioned on the previous 2 days that I was still golfing. And I could have gone golfing not yesterday, but the day before. So there's a immediate history of it being warm this late. Now, I will tell you, the National Weather Service just put out a report that yesterday's low, Friday's low, was tied. The record low for that date was tied with our temperature yesterday. And that's fairly unusual.
It'll be interesting to see if, it stays cold right on to Thanksgiving. If we get a snowy Thanksgiving, that could very well be the case. And, of course, that can foul up travel around that big travel holiday. We're a little bit ahead of that yet to be talking about that, I guess.
It'll be here before you know it.
We'll talk to you in a little bit, sir. Thank you. Max Armstrong with you on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio in the bowels of a hotel in Kansas City. And Orion and I have been here for our meeting at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I've spent the week here as we met with our board of directors, and I've had the privilege of serving as the president of the group, a 74-year-old organization with men and women across the country who, via radio and television and the Internet and podcasting, bring to farmers and ranchers the story of agriculture. And agriculture newsmakers come to our meeting every year. One of them is the Secretary of Agriculture, as I said with Matt a few minutes ago, and we'll hear some of the comments from the guy who used to be the governor of Georgia, who now runs the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But first up this morning on the Saturday Morning Show, Samuelson says, brought to you by the folks at Wink, Big O.
Welcome to Samuelson Says. Hello, everyone. I'm Orion Samuelson. Today, taking a look at a week of accomplishment in the agricultural broadcasting industry. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls. The little brown bottle has been around for 70 years and it's still number one. Check us out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Veterans Day weekend, and before I do anything else, let me call attention to the true meaning of Veterans Day, a time to honor, salute, and thank the veterans of all the military service who, in many cases, give their all to preserve freedom for you and for me. Having said that, let me talk about organizations. Because nearly every group, whether you produce milk or pork or beef or corn or wheat or soybeans or specialty crops, every one of you producers have banded together in an organization, whether it be the pork producers, the cattle producers, soybean or corn producers, there is an organization. And in our industry, farm broadcasting, there is an organization. It's been around since the mid-50s, National Association of Farm Broadcasting. And we come together every year in November in Kansas City to trade ideas, to look at new technology, to look at new ways we can serve America's agricultural producers via radio and television, and now quite a few more outlets for what we talk about. But we work hard at keeping up with the agricultural technology we talk about, and we work hard to make sure what we're doing will work for you. That's why this past week we spent 3 days in Kansas City looking at the new technology in broadcasting and telecasting and new ways that we can serve farmers. We also look at surveys that tell us what you like. And we are very pleased by the fact that you continue to listen despite all of the other outlets for information. You continue to listen to farm radio and to watch farm television. And one of the reasons you do, that's mentioned in the surveys we take, is you like the sound of a human voice. And you like the way my fellow broadcasters and me cover the agricultural news. So, a week and a year of accomplishment and the opportunity to say thank you for watching and listening. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O, thank you so much. He's a past president of this association, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, many years back. And they finally got desperate enough that I took the role for the past year. There are always newsmakers who stop by here, and it's a very interesting program every year. And the new Secretary of Agriculture joined us this week, the former governor of Georgia, Sonny Perdue, who hasn't had that job all that long when you think about it. I mean, it was just a year ago this week that Donald Trump was elected president, and Sonny Perdue didn't get in. I don't think he was confirmed until after the first 100 days of the Trump administration. It took a little while, and he still doesn't have all of the sub-cabinet positions filled. The man that he wants to bring in as number two at USDA, Bill Northey, a farmer from Iowa, still has not been confirmed, held up in the political process, not by Democrats, interestingly enough, but by Republican Senator Ted Cruz because of, well, a little tit for tat on Capitol Hill. Anyway, Secretary Perdue joined us. He sat down in an easy, big easy chair right next to mine. And as the farm broadcasters out in front of us listened and asked questions, he responded. And the secretary talked about the importance of agriculture telling its story. Let's take a listen.
No longer, I think you all understand, can the agriculturalists of America, the producers, the ranchers, the foresters, and all those involved in producing that wonderful bounty, sit behind the farm gate and said, I'm doing a good job. We got the story to tell. And if we don't tell it, as you know, other people will, and some are telling it wrong. So that's very important. Obviously, this is a major profession for us, and increasingly important going forward as we tell the wonderful story about American agriculture. And I love people ask me sometimes, how do you like D.C.? And I say, well, that's the wrong question. I love the job. And I'd probably love it more if I could do it from Georgia. But nonetheless, it's an awesome opportunity from a farm background, diversified row crop, dairy farm in middle Georgia, graduate veterinarian, agribusiness career. It's kind of the culmination there. When I was elected governor in 2002, the press asked me, they said, well, what does a farm kid in Bonaire, veterinarian and agribusiness guy know about being governor? I said, well, you got to have the tools, and I got them. I already got the boots, the glove, and the shovel. So, and we used all of them in that job. So nonetheless, it's a great opportunity, and we've got a great story to tell. All the way from the day of my confirmation or the day leading up, those 100 days leading up to my confirmation, as I visited with senators around the country, as I visited with different groups, really three things came to mind. I think they're still there. And we'll talk about, I'm sure you'll want to talk about some of them today, but certainly at the top of the list was trade. Right behind it was farm labor, and then regulations impeding our productive capacity. So I think those are all things that we are still working on aggressively. I'm glad to have Ted McKinney as Undersecretary for Trade. As you remember, the 14 Farm Bill suggested that we create a mission area dealing with Foreign Agricultural Service and trade. And we did that, And I think it's ever so important as we get out here around the world selling the benefits of American agriculture and American products. For young people on the communication aspect, I was in the UK a few weeks ago, and they have a tendency to disparage some of our products as far as safety in the United States. And one of those is they like to complain that our chicken is bathed and washed in chlorine. And while that's not a process that's used much anymore, I listened for a while, and I said, well, there's no reason. It's not in either of our best interests to start a food war over food safety. And by the way, can I ask you a question? They said, sure. I said, what do you all wash your salads in? They said, chlorine. So that's the kind of story you have to refute all around the world. And my job is part communication as well. And that's why I'm glad to be here with Learn From You Professionals and to have your voice leveraged out across the country. I enjoy the interviews with you and the communication with you as you reach those people who trust in you and believe in you across the hinterlands. And what I found is, I know you know your demographics better than I do, but they're not all farmers. You have a lot of people who are not on the farm, but listen to that trusted voice of agriculture that they want to rely on. So I appreciate the partnership that we can have. I want to be available to you all for the future in order to tell that story, because telling the story of American agriculture really is what you do, but it's also what we hope to do at USDA, not only here in this country, but around the world, about the benefits of the safe, nutritious, healthy, tasty food that we have all the way up and down the line. So it's good to be with you today. We're going to let you have a chance to ask any question you like today, and I look forward to responding as candidly as I can. Okay? Thank you all.
You are a veteran, are you not?
I am a veteran, yes.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
We have several in our audience and in our membership. Veterans of the military, would you please stand?
Yes.
I want to recognize genuine American hero. Thank you. Thank you, Jack. Yeah, thank you, sir.
I think some of your people covered our ceremony in the Whitten patio yesterday, where we saluted our veterans and announced a new Veterans to Agriculture program as well. So there's a great new website. We're very serious about supporting our veterans. They bring skill sets that we think work very well back in agriculture, all the way from production to processing. And so we're really reaching out to those men and women who served our country to give them an opportunity to further serve our country through producing that food supply.
Some of you have served more than once. Former Secretary Block here, who served with President Reagan, of course, is a military man as well. We thank you all for your service. We'll go to some questions momentarily, but I have one or two I wanted to ask you to begin
as
with.
As MC,
here.
You get the priority,
I
right?
I think there's a little bit of priority. We got confirmation this morning, of course, of a huge, even larger corn crop for the nation. That yield just keeps on climbing, I guess. It reminds us that we have to find a home for it all. How are we doing on that trade story? And as you know, farmers remain quite concerned about the trade agreements and getting agreements in place to continue going forward.
Well, certainly. Obviously, the abundance continues as we look at the genetics continue on these step increases in corn and soybeans as well. That means that we do have to find homes for it. And we're actively out here looking. We certainly, one of the goals is to preserve the homes that we have already. And that means NAFTA. Obviously, the people in this room and the producers around the country know how important NAFTA has been to American agriculture. I can assure you the administration knows how important agriculture and NAFTA has been to agriculture. And we're continuing negotiating. I think there's probably some room for some anxiety. Of course, farmers don't need a lot to be anxious about, but room for anxiety when we see some of the proclamations coming out. But at the end of the day, I think we will get an agreement. I think the president is a tough negotiator. It may go to the brink, but I believe we will get a new and actually a better agreement over NAFTA, particularly from the Canadian side for poultry, dairy, eggs, those kind of things, but even with our southern neighbors in Mexico.
Have we done any damage to these long-term relationships with all of the discussions and the rhetoric, if you will, that has taken place?
No, I don't think. I think it's really at the end of the day that these negotiations are tough as it is, and President Trump brings a different type of negotiator to the table. Ambassador Lighthizer works for him and has to has to listen to the president as he want the way he wants things done. So the president grew up in the real estate market in New York, and that's tough negotiation. Obviously, if you've read his book, The Art of the Deal, and he's made this statement publicly that he doesn't think you can get the best deal if you're not willing to walk away. And I think that that covers some of the strategy there. But I think at the end of the day, I know that he knows how important agriculture, NAFTA is to agriculture. He knows how important the agricultural economy is to the U.S. economy. He's obviously very focused on the trade deficit, and that's originated particularly with auto and auto parts coming from Mexico. But at the end of the day, I'm hopeful that we will get a NAFTA version 2 that's even better than the first.
Sonny Perdue, Secretary of Agriculture, native of Georgia. He gets back there not very often these days, he told me. As we were walking down the hallway the other day, he said it's about every 4 to 6 weeks between times he gets home, because he has had a very aggressive travel schedule, more so than I think any recent Secretary of Agriculture. He's out with farmers every week all over the United States. He was just in California, I believe, as the week began. Well, we'll take a look at that crop report and what went on as USDA released that. We'll get some analyst commentary from Arlen Suderman, respected analyst with INTLFC Stone, as the Saturday morning show continues on WGN Radio. Doggone it, it's cold across the Midwest this morning. Wind chill in the Chicago area down about 16 degrees, 27 at the airports. For the actual air temperature, we might make it up close to 40 today. We're in Kansas City as we're coming to you on the Saturday morning show, where the meeting of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting wrapped up last night with our President's Dinner. And it was a pleasure to have Mr. Samuel sit alongside us there, along with a lot of other farm broadcasters. I said, Big O, why don't you just sleep in? Just kind of, get a little beauty rest. So I'm handling the responsibilities in the bowels of the hotel here this morning, where I wouldn't have to worry about waking up anyone. That USDA crop report was interesting. We don't get another one actually estimating the crop size until January, and those presumably are the final word. Those figures on the crop production for the United States for 2017. And, you know, there's the old expression, big crops get bigger as the reports advance. And that's been the case for the corn crop this year, as USDA came in with an estimate 2% bigger than the crop estimate in October. And that came across because of higher yields, higher yield per acre. And we'd been hearing that from farmers as they were going through the fields and the combines, the anecdotal reports we were getting from them. You know, they'd be kind of quiet, and they said, you know what, this is better than I thought. And that was the case in some areas where the crop was even really terribly stressed. Farmers got into the field, and they looked up at the yield monitor, and the number was better than expected. So USDA raised the corn yield to 175.4 bushels an acre. If anybody asks you during the holiday season, write this down now, because this could be good small talk around the Thanksgiving table. How much corn do they get per acre? And you can respond and say, well, nationwide, the average yield is 175.4 bushels to the acre. And that is down, I would say, that total crop size is down from a year ago. The yield per acre, the highest ever, but the total crop size, because of less acreage, was actually down about 4% from last year, 14.6 billion bushels. Soybeans, now a little bit different story. Soybean total, the total production in the United States will be the biggest crop ever. 4.43 billion bushels of beans. And thank goodness the Chinese continue to buy actively our soybeans to find a home for all of that. And that was down about 1% from the estimate of last month, but 3% bigger than the soybean crop of a year ago. And if anybody asks you how many beans they get per acre, how much yield, well, nationwide, it's just about 50 bushels, 49.5, according to the USDA this week. How did that all come to pass? Well, we'll talk about that with an agronomist coming up next here on the Saturday Morning Show. All right, Rascal, appreciate it much. Have a good day, good weekend, good week ahead. We'll catch you soon, Rog.
All right, buddy, you too.
Roger Batty's in the WGN newsroom there, and there's more coming up on the Saturday Morning Show. I wonder if anybody's in the field this morning. Heard of a combine fire this week west of Chicago. I've got to get the details on that, but that's not unheard of during harvest season. Boy, I want to tell you, when one burns, it is a hot fire. It is a quick fire. It is a very smoky fire. You can see that black smoke, and it's a helpless feeling for the grower when the fire advances that far along. Producers carry extinguishers, certainly urged to do so, and some can get them put out in time. But if you don't, they go quickly. Hey, if anybody's out there working this morning and you're in the cab, direct message me, would you, on Twitter? And if you follow Twitter, please follow me at Max Armstrong. We were talking about the size of the crop, the yield per acre, despite the fact that it was a miserable crop season for some. I mean, especially the way it started and the need to replant, and for some growers, replant and even plant a third time. I talked about it the other day with Jim Donnelly. Jim is an agronomist with DeKalb Asgrow. And as I led off the conversation, I asked him, Jim, we started out behind this season, and I guess that's the way we're going to wrap it up, too.
Yeah, we definitely did, Max. You know, we started off, you know, things were pretty tough, at least for Northern Illinois, to get the crop in the ground. You know, it seemed like we only had a few days in April to get that in for corn, and then she kind of shut off for us for a couple weeks, so just cold and wet, and, you know, the bulk of it really didn't get put in until mid-May and beyond. So that kind of set the stage for 17 for sure. You know, the whole rest of the summer and spring was just wet and cool for the most part and pretty much delayed everything. And frankly, if it wasn't for all those warm temps in September, we'd be a lot worse off than we are.
Will growers make adjustments because of this kind of spring? And it seems like more and more we're getting wet springs and cold springs and late springs. But will a farmer typically adjust his or her program, or will they say, okay, this is kind of an aberration this year?
Yeah, I would say the temptation is there. You know, we tend to get those questions a lot from growers on, you know, whether they should, you know, change to some earlier hybrids or earlier maturities, et cetera. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we really need to go off of averages. You know, about the time we start, you know, making changes due to the previous year's environment or weather, it usually, you know, kind of we usually pay the price for it. So we really want to go after, you know, kind of base all of our decisions on the averages, because about the time we make those changes, it's going to be a nice early summer, and we plant those 101-day hybrids or something, they'll be done in August. So we really need to stick to the averages as much as we can.
I remember visiting many years ago with some of your predecessors who would say, you know, we counsel growers to put together kind of a mixed basket, if you will, of numbers so that they can spread their risk a little bit. Is that still done to some extent, or do you typically just really zero in on matching the hybrid to that particular field, to the soil type, to the kind of fertility program that you've got going there? What do you recommend to your producers?
To some extent, it really is a mix of both. So you really have to look at a package, just kind of like, you know, if we're making decisions based off of last year, a lot of times this next year is a whole lot different than the last year. So if we make those decisions based on what we just saw, a lot of times we can make the wrong decision. So we really have to you know, basically work off the averages when it comes to hybrid performance, variety performance, et cetera. With that being said, though, you know, companies such as ourselves, you know, we're gathering a lot of data on different hybrids by soil type, by environment. And with a lot of that information, we can really zero in on you know, a particular field and really trying to determine, you know, what the best product is for that environment, for that field. So it really is a mix of both, kind of playing the averages, but also, you know, looking at the data that we have in front of us to be able to pick the best product that we can.
You mentioned the data. That's what I call the other harvest, the bountiful, bountiful harvest of data coming out of the fields now. For most of the customers for DeKalb Asgrow, will they sit and analyze this for a few days? Will they wait in the days after harvest, settle into the recliner, maybe put it up on the iPad and take a look at this data? Or are some of them right now making that decision, or have they even already prior to now made the decision on the seeds that they will plant and the seeds they will purchase for 2018?
Well, once again, it really is a mix of both. So, you know, when you come off of a year and you've got one hybrid that really stands out, you know, chances are that they're really going to go with that particular hybrid regardless. You know, if it's fresh in their minds, it's at the top of their yield averages for their hybrids, they're probably going to go with that. But as harvest winds down, with the new tools that they have, such as Climate Field View, you know, that they have that information right at their disposal, right in their iPad, there's a lot more of that that goes on, and we're glad that it is, you know, growers are becoming a little more informed and actually utilizing that data that they've been collecting over the many years. You know, now they can look at that data and really make some more educated, you know, guesses as far as that goes when determining the hybrids that they want to choose.
I would imagine a seed company welcomes early booking, too, from the standpoint that it tells you folks just what kind of supplies you're going to need to bring along through the pipeline.
Of course, and really it does benefit the grower to ensure that they really get the hybrids that they want. You know, the earlier they book those, the more apt they are to get exactly what they want, both hybrid as well as seed sizes as well.
There's been the concern, of course, and I know it's been addressed at some meetings already, and there will be many more over the course of the winter about the dicamba drift problem that surfaced and was described by a lot of growers, and yet I had others who tell me, you know what, I saw a little cupping in my soybeans from dicamba drift, and those were some of the best beans I harvested. It's a highly variable thing. It's going to be much discussed this winter. Are you hearing a lot of questions asked by the DeKalb AgroGrow customers?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's a lot of questions that's being asked, and I don't blame them one bit. I would say that, you know, from a Monsanto standpoint, you know, we've done, in my opinion, a very good job at trying to pinpoint, you know, exactly what the issues were that were out there. And I think we've done a pretty good job at least addressing, you know, some of the main components to what was going on out there. And I think that, you know, growers can expect over the next, you know, coming months to get a lot of that information at training meetings, et cetera, this winter. And I think that will ease a lot of growers' sentiments with regards to the platform. One thing that I can say is those growers that implemented it this year from a weed control standpoint were extremely pleased that, you know, they haven't had that level of weed control in their fields for several years now with the onslaught of, you know, glyphosate-resistant water hemp, mare's tail, et cetera. So they're really excited to be able to use that program, and I think over the next couple months, I think they'll kind of be at ease with the information that we share with them.
Where the resistance has reared its ugly head, it has been painfully obvious, hasn't it, Jim? I mean, you go down the road and all of a sudden you look and you say, wait, what in the world happened there?
Yeah, and it's something that, from a Northern Illinois standpoint, I would say we've been lucky that we haven't had to deal with it to the extent that our brothers and sisters down in Central and Southern Illinois have had to deal with. You know, they've had real problems down there. It's something that's really starting to pop up our way. Just year after year, you see more water hemp coming through, and this year there's more fields that, you know, you have those straggling water hemp plants that next year or the year after when they have beans, it's really going to show up. You know, up here, glyphosate-resistant mare's tail has been a pretty big issue and continues to spread. So that may be something that other parts of the state haven't had to deal with as much. But we've got a couple different species that we're really starting to deal with, and that's going to be even more apparent over the next couple of years.
I was at an event about 3 weeks ago, and the farm lady said to me, the way this is looking, she said, I'm a little concerned about what I might be doing on Thanksgiving Day. I may be in the field. Already then she was concerned
well,
about it.
I tell you what, we were running some growing degree day numbers in August, and it was not a pretty sight, that's for sure. we were tracking well below normal, you know, kind of close to that ominous 2009 level. And thank God we got those 2 weeks of, you know, well above normal temperatures that really accelerated things along. So if it wasn't for that period, I tell you what, we'd be in a pretty good hurt for harvest this fall.
Yeah, Jim Donnelly with DeKalb Asgrow, as we visited a few days ago about this harvest leading up to the kind of numbers USDA reported. Weird Dave out in Will County getting ready to head to the field this morning. He said not in the combine yet. He said he's waiting for the sun to come up. Dave Kessel said he's down to less than a couple of 100 acres of corn left in the field yet. Moisture isn't coming on down. It's down around 18 to 21% and staying there. That's a quote, Dave. Let's get this done ASAP. Don't want to listen to Christmas music in the combine cab. I imagine a lot of others would share that sentiment, Dave. There's more coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio. 13 minutes before 6 on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio. Max Armstrong here coming to you from Kansas City, where the farm broadcasters held their meeting. We held our meeting this week, 74th annual meeting of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. And a lot of newsmakers come in and join us here. Arlen Suderman, respected crop analyst, market analyst, came in and sat down with me for a few minutes, and he did so right after the release of that November crop report. So I led off to Arlen by asking this question. Well, you were talking ahead of this report about a higher corn number. You were very committed to that. I know there was a little chatter out there about the INTLFC stone corn number, and guess what? It wasn't quite high enough, was it?
Yeah, it really surprised me. I have an agronomist background, and back in August, I never would have dreamed the crop would be this big. But as we saw the yields coming in, the yields were simply unbelievable. We may see Nebraska pull back a little bit. They have a devastating windstorm there that knocked 30, 40 bushels an acre off onto the ground in many locations in some of the prime production areas. But for the most part, the crop is big and a record yield. Really surprising a lot of us in the end compared to what we thought back in August, but it also speaks to the American farmer and his ability to manage that crop and to what a cool August will do.
And the varieties that we have to work with now.
Definitely so. Genetics are a big part of that.
But you talked about a cool August. I mean, that was the saving grace for many, wasn't it, given how dry it was?
It really is. These genetics, if you give them that cool August during grain field period, can really pack the starches into those kernels and give us a lot of depth of kernel, and that's what happened here in this with this crop. Yes, we were dry. Yes, we were stressing the crop, but with the cool temperatures, the crop was able to overcome that. It's going to be hard for the trade now to believe a crop stress story in the future unless it's just really hot in Chicago.
Well, now, I always think that it's going to be hard for the trade to buy into it. But listen, we've seen this year after year in many instances that the trade overreacts to what is perceived to be a problem in the field at the time.
And that's a money story. The markets, the fund managers don't make money in a stagnant market. So if the corn market's sitting and they get an excuse of a weather story to trade, they're going to trade it. They'll trade it too far in both directions to try to get the volatility in the market. And that's just the nature of it. They gave us $7 corn, and they've given us sub $3 corn in recent years. So that's the nature of the fund money being involved.
But their volatility isn't always bad for the grower.
Yeah, exactly right. The grower needs to simply have an understanding of what's driving the market and how realistic is it that it'll be sustained, and then develop their risk management strategy around that.
Given the amount of crop still out there in the field, how much could the January number move on corn yield compared to this one?
Well, history would suggest that there is a little bit of a bias to maybe see it go up a tad more. I probably wouldn't expect more than a bushel, but we're already in record territory. There is some history of coming down a little bit, but I think the trade's going to assume here that we're pretty close. From a percentage standpoint, it's going to be a very small amount.
Before we leave the corn for just a moment, does this kind of change the ideas of planting in the spring? I mean, is this going to further drive down corn acreage?
The market has really been trying to buy acres away from corn to soybeans. This is simply increases that emphasis.
We need to shift the gaze a little bit to soybeans. There was nothing friendly in that November report. Where do we go from here?
Not much change in this report either. We're still looking at above 400 million bushels. Now, the trade is assuming that USDA is again underestimating demand into China.
They've been doing that.
It's done that 18 out of the last 22 years by an average of roughly 100 million bushels. So the trade is assuming we're going to end up with closer to 7.5% stocks to use and a low 300 million. Whether we will, though, is going to be, I think, contingent upon South America, whether they're going to have above-trend yields or below-trend yields. It's simply too early to know that. We'll probably be dry in Argentina, probably be good in Brazil, but we'll see how this plays out. But right now, it's pretty much status quo, not much change in this report, and the funds wanting a story in soybeans, they love trading soybeans, love the volatility, that they just need a story, and one's not there yet.
So what we saw in the wake of the report was beans were under some pressure, but corn was kind of carrying the weight there.
Corn down and corn charts look bad, and that's acting as an anchor on the soybeans. Trade was disappointed, and of course the algorithmic traders were selling soybeans initially because the yield did not drop, but I don't sense any real change in the sentiment here. Soybeans have really been following crude oil in the broader commodity complex, and if we maintain some strength in crude oil, soybeans might be able to have a little bit more strength in here. But to sustain that, they need a weather story.
Other than that, I mean, without a weather story, you're still talking a fairly narrow range, are you not?
Yeah, we do. The trade usually finds an excuse at some point during the year to get some volatility in soybeans, but they've been very well supported above that $9 level. The funds just simply don't like to see now we're a dollar above that. That means we have some downside risk in this market. Upside is probably limited, though, until or unless we can get a weather story.
Trade. All the discussion about trade right now, that's a longer-term picture, but sometimes it can bring a near-term reaction to the market. Are you watching it closely?
We are. Export shipments are very strong right now. Export sales are trailing the pace they need to be to hit USDA's target. So eventually the shipment pace is going to have to slow down unless we can pick up sales. I'm talking soybeans here. Corn, we're already well below the pace that we need to hit USDA's old target, let alone their new target now that's 75 million bushels larger. China bought another 12 million metric tons, 400 plus million bushels. They were going to do that anyway. It was largely ceremonial. They did open the door a little bit more for DDGs, which may tighten our DDG market here in the United States a little bit and be good for soy meal to give a little bit more lift to soybeans.
Finally, in the remaining half minute, what did our wheat growers do with seeding winter wheat acreage this fall?
We're looking for the number to come in 4 to 6% lower. It was going to be much lower than that. Then we had some good rains in the plains, and some farmers said, well, I'm going to put a cover crop in and maybe graze it, and I'll decide in the spring whether to keep it for grain.
I saw some comment about that in the social media, growers running that drill through the field and saying, why are we doing this? But that gives them an option.
Yeah, wheat just doesn't pencil out well at all.
Thank you, Arlen. Appreciate it. Arlen Suderman from INTLFC Stone. We enjoyed the visit with Arlen here at the meeting of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Some interesting data on trade when you take a look at what's going on, especially with our meat trade with the world. 26% of our United States pork production. Now, that accounts to about $50 per hog, winds up in the export market. 26% of our pork production going into exports. And 80% of those exports are going to five countries. Pork exports are going to Japan, Mexico, Canada, China, and South Korea. 80% of the pork we ship out going to those top five. And what strikes you is that two of the five are partners or have been in the North American Free Trade Agreement. And the beef exports, beef shipments out of the country, quite strong too. Our friend Dennis Smith at Archer Financial Services tweeted the other day that the September beef exports were up 14%, and 40% of that increase to Japan. So Asia continues to be a very prime destination for the meat that we ship out of this country. We'll talk to Mike Steben ahead of going outside the loop here on WGN Radio coming up. Got a report from Jerry. He was traveling along I-88, Western Illinois, all the way to Iowa. Said he saw a lot of equipment in the field working during the night out to the west. So as you folks are working to get the harvest in yet, be careful, extra careful, because when we are under pressure, it seems like that's when accidents occur. Thanks a lot to Bob Ferguson for his help as engineer this morning. And thanks to Tom Brad, our executive director of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, for helping make a facility available to me this morning to come to you from Kansas City. On behalf of Orion Samuelson, Max Armstrong here. Mr. Stephen, I'm interested in this gentleman who drives for Uber, and I have a story for you.
Oh, really?
I got into Uber. I Ubered to O'Hare. I was going out of the country. This was, I don't know, about a year or so ago. And I struck up a conversation with the Uber driver, and he was very interesting. You know, you look at somebody and you think, what's this guy doing here? Anyway, he was a sales executive for a fairly major corporation. And I asked the question. I said, on a Saturday morning, why are you driving for Uber? And he said, I need to get out of the house. He said, I don't think my wife can take this much of me being around. And he said, I need the escape. So he said, that's why I'm out here.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to find out why this guy who was in finance for 30 years decided to do it. And it's a really interesting story, and all the stuff that he saw when he drove Uber that happened in the back seat of his own car. It was his own car. By the way, a Mercedes, a silver Mercedes.
Is this adult content coming up here outside the loop, Mike?
No. We'll keep it above board. We'll keep it above board. It's all good.
I just wondered about that back seat thing.
No, we'll keep it all good. We'll keep it all good. Hey, Max, you enjoy Kansas City.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right, there he goes. Max Armstrong.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.